Welcome to Creative Warriors, a community of purpose-driven entrepreneurs, creative thinkers in business doing what we are meant to do. I'm your host, Jeffrey Shaw. All right, hello, Warriors. Today, I am very excited to introduce Chris Guillebeau. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Jeffrey. It's a big honor.
Excellent. Well, let me tell you all a little bit about Chris. Chris is a New York Times best-selling author and modern-day explorer. During a lifetime of self-employment that included a four-year commitment as a volunteer executive in West Africa, he visited every country in the world, 193 in total, before his 35th birthday. Since then, he has modeled the proven definition of an entrepreneur, someone who will work 24 hours a day for themselves to avoid working 1 hour a day for someone else. Chris's first book, The Art of Nonconformity, was translated into more than 20 languages. His second book, The $100 Startup, was a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller, selling more than 300,000 copies worldwide. His latest book, The Happiness of Pursuit, Finding the Quest That Will Bring Purpose to Your Life, will take Chris on a 40-city tour starting next week. This book and the idea of having a quest is primarily what we're going to talk about today. In addition to all this, every summer, Chris hosts the World Domination Summit in Portland, Oregon, which is a gathering of creative, remarkable people with thousands in attendance. Chris is also the founder of Pioneer Nation, Unconventional Guides, the Travel Hacking Cartel, and numerous other projects, including the AONC, which is the Art of Nonconformity, which is his blog about unconventional people doing remarkable things, changing the world by achieving personal goals while helping others at the same time. So, Warriors, we are so very fortunate to have a change maker in our presence and a trendsetter like Chris with us today. Very excited to get started. So before we do, we're going to start off, as we always do, with a couple of questions I ask of every guest. So Chris, tell us something about who you are, not what you do, and something that your bio doesn't say, because we want to connect with you personally.
Yeah, well, great question. Wonderful introduction. Thank you. That's extremely kind. I think, maybe the thing to point out that's not in the bio, but kind of runs throughout all of those nice things you said is, I like to start things. And I really like, there's a quote by Tina Roth Eisenberg, who's known as Swiss Miss. She's also in New York. And she says, I want to be remembered as a person who wasn't afraid to start things. And I really like that quote. I identify with it quite a bit. I have a lot of weaknesses. You know, you mentioned a lot of projects. Not all of them have done super great. And I'm not always so good at minding the store, but I'm very much motivated by starting things. So that's kind of why I do what I do.
Fantastic. Can you share with us then, what is one best piece of advice you ever received?
I heard this quote once and I liked it so much, I started using it in my email signature. And the quote is by Alan Keatley, who was a writer and activist. And the quote is, "Once in a while, it really hits people that they don't have to experience the world in the way they have been told to." And that's been kind of a theme that I've used throughout The Art of Nonconformity, throughout the books, all the different things I do. For better or worse, I think what I'm trying to do, or at least what I'm hoping to do, is to encourage people to live unconventional lives. And I think that quote or that lesson kind of illustrates it.
Fantastic. And I am so excited to talk to you about the whole idea of a quest. And I have to say, I too have begun using the term quest in place of what we used to say as a goal. So tell us then what you see as the difference between a goal and a quest. And then we're going to talk about the five criteria for a quest as defined in your book.
Yeah, so I've always been super goal-oriented. I like goals. I think goals can be lots of different things. But a goal is kind of open-ended. You know, you can have a goal of, going down to the corner coffee shop in the morning and getting a cup of coffee and coming back or something. And, I mean, most people wouldn't have a goal that simple, but you could have all sorts of different things as a goal. And for me, when I began the travel quest to go to every country in the world, I started just out of a love of travel. But I liked the idea of structure. I liked the idea of turning it into a list and kind of crossing off all the different places I had gone to. So eventually that whole, you know, project of traveling became a quest to visit every country in the world. So I think a quest is maybe more specific, perhaps more challenging, perhaps takes a longer period of time. Then there's usually something else that happens along the way. So there's a transformative aspect, I believe, of a quest that isn't always present in a goal.
Fantastic. You, in fact, in the book, lay out 5 criteria for a quest that I'd like to read so that all the warriors can hear this, because I think it really defines so beautifully the difference between a quest and a goal. So you define it as, 1, a quest has a clear goal and a specific endpoint. Mm-hmm. 2, a quest presents a clear challenge. 3, a quest requires sacrifice of some kind. 4, a quest is often driven by a calling or a sense of mission. And lastly, 5, a quest requires a series of small steps and incremental progress towards a goal. So what can you add to that 5 criteria for to help us really understand and deepen our understanding of what a quest is?
So when I began the process of research for this book, I used a similar model that I use for $100 Startup. And in that project, I was looking at people who started businesses for a small amount of money without going to business school. It was pretty straightforward. And, you know, I heard from lots of people and I was extrapolating the lessons and figuring out how to build a narrative around it. I wanted to do something similar, but it's a little bit difficult, or a little bit more difficult in this case, because, you know, as you said, what is a quest? It's not quite as clearly defined. So as I kind of sifted through all the data, it was like, okay, let us establish some criteria. And those are the 5 points, you know, that I chose. There's lots of different things that all of us do with our lives, lots of different ways to fill our time, things to focus on, et cetera, but not everything is a quest. And so you mentioned challenge, and I think I briefly alluded to it. Most quests do require some kind of sacrifice or at least some real trade-off. If sacrifice sounds like a heavy, depressing word, it's not meant to. It just means that, you know, if you're really going to work towards something that you believe in, you know, for much of your life, you're probably going to have to say no to other things. So I was interested in figuring out, okay, who are people that have done this? You know, I did this in my own life, but I don't want to just write about myself. So who are the different people who've done this in different ways all over the world? And what can we learn from them? How can we take their lessons and apply them to our lives?
Beautifully said. I'm part of a leadership development group, and we speak in terms of quest a lot. And in a simple way, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts on this is, we've decided that a quest is that thing you're walking towards, having no idea how the hell you're going to get there.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think there's a couple of ways of looking at it, right? Because I think it can be sometimes though you do have an idea. It's just, you don't necessarily know how it's all going to go, and you know that there could be some challenges that might be, you know, unanticipated or unexpected. But you do have that goal, right? Like, you have something that you're working towards. So I think that's an important distinction, because maybe there's some things that we're working for in life that are just general improvements, and that's good as well. But it's not a quest because there's not a destination to it.
Beautiful. So now, your own quest was to visit all 193 countries by the age of 35. So tell us what inspired that and some highlights of your journey.
Yeah, so I just love to travel. I was fortunate to start traveling at a pretty young age. When I was 22, I moved to West Africa, and I lived on board a hospital ship in Sierra Leone and Liberia for the better part of 4 years. And as part of that experience, I started traveling elsewhere in Africa. Then our ship would sail to Europe a couple times a year, and so I would have a bunch of countries I'd go to there. So I just loved travel. But as I mentioned, I was always a goal setter. I liked writing things down. That was another quality that we discovered among people who pursue quests. A lot of them like to write things down and check things off. So I was always that person. And I guess at a certain point, I was on this long train ride. This is way back when, you know, Wi-Fi was not ubiquitous. I just had my paper notebook and my International Herald Tribune. And I just started making a list of all the countries I'd been to, and I realized it was about 50 countries. And then I said, hey, you know, wouldn't it be fun to set this lifelong goal of trying to go to 100 countries? And so I started working towards that. And I realized that 100 countries was not a super challenging goal. Like, maybe it met those criteria that we talked about before, but there wasn't a whole lot of challenge, you know, or sacrifice involved, because I knew if I could just kind of go to whatever countries I wanted to, I could get to those 100. So the quest to go everywhere came about as I approached that initial goal. I started thinking, like, what would be a real challenge? And I had just moved back to the U.S. I was doing a graduate school program. I was working as an entrepreneur. And I had the idea to start a writing project that eventually became The Art of Nonconformity. But in the beginning, it was just like, I want to write about my travel and write about life and how I see the world. What would that look like? And that's how I said, I'm going to have this quest to go to every country in the world. The deadline came about because I think every good goal has a deadline. I think at least for my case, if I didn't have the deadline, I would have just, you know, I would have made progress toward that goal, but I certainly wouldn't have achieved it now. And maybe if I ran into, you know, hard times or challenges, I might be tempted to put some countries off or something. But having the deadline also helped me going, helped me, you know, keep going. And so now I'm 36. Last year, I was able to accomplish that goal.
Fantastic. And in the book, of course, you share many amazing stories of your journey. Are there any highlights that you could extract that you would share with us tonight?
Oh, yes, that's right. You asked about that. Sorry, I feel like I rambled a bit. You know, for me, the journey was transformative in lots of ways. I gained a lot of confidence. You know, I was kind of a shy, introverted person before I left. I'm still introverted, but I guess I came to believe that I could, you know, resolve any situation or, you know, the worst case scenario, whatever that was, probably wasn't going to happen most of the time. Met a lot of wonderful, amazing people, learned that not everybody sees the world the way that I do, which is a fantastic thing to learn as you go about the world. And then probably the greatest thing for me was just the development of a community that came to be because of it. Because I just started, as I said, the solo traveler doing my own little thing, and then started meeting lots of people. And then I started connecting with them through social media, through the blog. And that just changed everything, gave me a whole different perspective. And it led to some business things like the books, but mostly it just led me to a greater awareness of the values of community and gratitude. So for that, I'm very grateful.
Terrific. Well, I have to say, one of the book is fantastic, by the way. So the book, Happiness of Pursuit, what took me by surprise is that you not only shared your story, which is fantastic, but you also shared the stories of many people who have accomplished amazing quests. Do you have do you have a favorite story of all those people you interviewed, or a lesson from one fellow quester that really stood out to you?
Yeah, when I wrote the book, I definitely didn't want it to just be my story. I feel like that's problematic on multiple levels. I did want to look at quests and say, why do people in general pursue them? What can we learn from them? So initially, I was kind of drawn towards some other travel quests, just because that's my own bias, my own experience. And so it was some really interesting adventure goals. There's a young guy from Maine who walked across America in about 7.5 months and eventually reaching the San Francisco Bay. And he talked about... you know, he just did that because he had this crazy idea and the idea wouldn't leave him alone. And he finally just had to do it. And he talked about, you know, what a difference it made in his life. So I had a lot of stuff like that. But fortunately, we got a bit broader than just travel and what we might typically think of as adventure. And we looked at people doing arts and crafts projects, some academic projects, some activists. There was a young woman in Tasmania, Australia, who, as part of a protest of illegal logging, she climbed a eucalyptus tree and built a platform at the top of this tree and lived in the tree for more than a year just to prevent loggers from coming into the forest. So that was a fantastic story. There was also lots of stories of what we might think of as ordinary people doing really interesting things. There was a woman in Omaha who was a knitter, and she'd always made hats. And she thought about making 1,000 hats, and then she realized that would take her a year or two. And she thought, what would be a bigger challenge? She decided to knit 10,000 hats. So I think for the past 3 years, she's been working along, you know, toward this quest. And you can go to her website and request a free hat. And there's a whole charity tie into it. So just lots of interesting things of people, you know, who have all adopted this value of pursuing a quest, but then applying it in their own way.
Terrific. There are it's story after story of just amazing, amazing people. And in your book, you refer to a life list instead of a bucket list. I loved this because I have to say the bucket list idea has always freaked me out a bit, you know?
Yeah.
And here I'm reading this book and you call it a life list and I just lit up. I was like, fantastic. Somebody gave it a different name. So now was this an intentional spin on the term and why? And can you share some life list examples?
Yeah, I don't know if it was intentional or not. I have to be honest with you. Maybe it was just a semantical thing, or maybe I just like that the alliteration of life list better. You know, I guess bucket list, maybe, you know, it's implicitly negative, you know, it's implicitly kind of focused on death, right?
Right.
Whereas a life list is like, here you have this beautiful life, you know, stretched out before you. You know, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to choose to fill your time? And also, I think maybe when we think of the bucket list concept, I think people tend to put really really big things down there, and I think that's good. But they all put the same kind of things down. They all like, I want to travel to this particular destination. They all want to have this one extreme experience, and that's great. But the idea of the life list is there's all kinds of different things that you want to do, and most of us are multifaceted. Most of us aren't just interested in one particular hobby, or we're not one dimensional. So let's look at our whole lives and think, okay, this life stretches out before us. What do we want that to look like? What are some crazy things we're going to do, but what are some also maybe boring or routine things that actually have some value, you know, if we build towards something over time? What does that look like, and how can we live according to that?
Fantastic. So one of the things I love about the book is that there are many, you know, put down the book and think about a question moments, you know, things like, if you could do anything at all without regard to time or money, what would it be? Mm-hmm. You know, what's worth living for? Mm-hmm. And if I could do anything, what would it be? Would it be what I'm doing today? I mean, just incredible questions that literally just cause you to pause, close the book, and really take in the question. And yet, perhaps the most common phrase you heard from those questers you interviewed was, if I didn't do it, I would always wonder about what could have been. So do you think these seekers are more focused on living life to the fullest, or are they also very aware or more aware of their mortality?
Yeah, I mean, lots of great stuff there. That phrase that you mentioned, you know, if I didn't do it, I would always regret it. I did hear that over and over from people. And that was also my motivation, you know, as well. When I first had the concept of, you know, going to every country, I didn't adopt it right away. I thought maybe kind of sat on it for a few months and thought about what it would involve and how much money would it take and how much time would it require and what would the other costs be and the uncertainties and all that kind of stuff. And so I kind of like, you know, I make this like pros and cons list, but that only goes so far. I think what really tipped me over was when I started thinking about regret, and I started thinking, you know, I actually have a chance to do it. Like this is it's a pretty crazy project, but it's not totally impossible. You know, I'm not trying to like go to 10 different planets, you know, in the solar system, right? If I work at it, you know, diligently, you know, over the course of the 8 years, I think it was at that point, I know I can probably do it. And if whether I do or not, like, I don't really care about that so much, but I think I'm pretty sure that I will regret if I didn't try, right? So that was a very motivating factor, a driving force for me and lots of other people as well. About the mortality thing, that was also something that was interesting. I didn't expect that at all, but when I talk to people, you know, I ask a lot of open-ended questions, just as you do for the podcast, and was really surprised to hear a few, you know, key themes that came back. I mean, one of them was the list thing that I mentioned. People liked, you know, making lists and that incremental progress and steps along the way, milestones. That was very common. Another thing was just what I called an emotional awareness of mortality, which is simply just the knowledge that we ourselves one day will die, as opposed to the intellectual knowledge that everyone dies. And again, that's not meant to be depressing or you know, disheartening. In fact, a lot of people that I talk to, they kind of use that as a positive, you know, inspiration, as a positive like way of going forward. Like, you know, my life is short. I want my days to matter. Therefore, what should I be doing? You know, how should I fill those days? What should I be building over time? You know, who are my closest relationships? How can I, you know, serve those people, but also do something for myself and pursue my own dream? That's kind of what pushed them along.
Right. There was sort of a paradox to it, you know, because I really embrace that idea of an emotional awareness of the mortality. And yet, in a lot of ways, the people you interviewed, well, sort of like yourself, just, you know, the fact the book is called The Happiness Pursuit, you seem more like a glass half full kind of guy, as it seemed were most of the people you interviewed. So there's a little bit of a paradox in the emotional awareness, and yet for the most part seem to have a perspective of just really wanting to embrace life and making the best of it.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation. I mean, I think that's astute. I think it's complicated. I mean, people certainly dealt with lots of emotional issues, in particular in coming to the end of a quest. That's complicated for a lot of people, including me, something that's been a big part of your identity for a while. But I suppose at least I am fundamentally optimistic, like overall. I do wake up for the most part excited about what I'm doing and, you know, trying to create a life that I find to be meaningful.
Great. So in the book, you also refer, and I think this will be very interesting for our community of creative warriors. In the book, you refer to the difference between a quest and a career move. Can a career also be a quest? And I ask that because for our community of creative entrepreneurs, most of which are very purpose driven, it seems to me it would be possible that one's career could also be their quest. No?
No, absolutely could be possible. Yeah, I don't think there has to be a distinction necessarily. I mean, or even if the career and the quest are not one and the same, you know, perhaps there's a way that they are closely linked or closely aligned. You know, I just mean, you know, when I say like be careful about the distinction or what, I forget exactly how I phrased it. There's something about the career move. You know, I just had to, at least in my own quest and the people I talked to, had to be careful, always be aware of our motivations, you know, for doing something. And in my case, like going to every country in the world, you know, I don't think I would have been able to sustain that if my motivations were career or anything other than just the fact that this is a big challenge that I embrace, that I want to do. I mean, there are too many times that would have been a lot easier to do something different. So I certainly think your career and your quest or your project can be aligned in some way.
Right. I think for many creatives, that ultimately is the challenge, because a lot of creatives would in fact do what they do for nothing.
Right,
Which then poses the challenge of not creating sustainable businesses, which as a business coach is my intention for them, because it's, you know, it's creating sustainable business that allows them to continue to give their gifts. So again, another paradox, they kind of go hand in hand. So another thing I absolutely love is that you give your years an overall theme, kind of a title for the year. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I thought I was the only weirdo that did that. And I think it's a great idea for mm-hmm. people to embrace the idea. It's sort of an intention for the year. Some of your years have been called the year of learning, the year of scale and reach. So what is the benefit, do you think, of giving the years of your life a theme?
So it relates to this exercise I do called an annual review, and people can learn about that either in the book or it's free on my website. Every year in December, I kind of go away for the better part of a week and think about my life and think about the goals that I've been working toward. And I set new goals for the next year, and I kind of create those goals in a few different categories, from health to finances, relationship, business, writing, you know, all that different stuff. And I usually create 3 to 5 specific sub goals within each one of those categories. And this is just a process I developed over a series of years. And one of the activities that I do, it usually kind of emerges on day 3 or 4 or something, is, okay, I've got all this stuff I'm going to do. I like to do more than one project. I don't want to just kind of restrict myself to one thing. That's always been, you know, how I'm built or whatever. But is there a theme, you know, that all of these things encompass? And so I think I started with something like, you mentioned a few of them. There's the year of learning. I was finishing a master's degree. It was like the year of scale and reach is when I kind of prepared to go a bit broader with some of my work. And, you know, it's just kind of meant to be something to guide decisions. It's meant to be something when I'm kind of evaluating, okay, this project, you know, can do a lot of things, but I probably can't do everything. Does it fit within this general framework? How do I feel about it? If it fits and I feel good, then it's a yes. You know, if it doesn't meet one of those criteria, then maybe it's a little more complicated, and I think about it before I automatically say yes.
Terrific. You know, it's, you claim, you call yourself even you have a love for starting things, and that seems really evident. You're what I would call, I mean, you're kind of the perfect person in my wheelhouse, like that massive creator. Is there a common thread, do you think, in everything that you do? Is there a common purpose? Is there a common thread that you're aware of?
Very good question. Sometimes I feel like there isn't, because sometimes I feel like I just like to start different stuff, and some of it's a little bit random. And, you know, I wonder if people look at it from the outside and think, well, that's interesting, but what does that have to do with, you know, something else? I guess, you know, if I had to apply my own label, I would say I'm hoping that, you know, this value of living differently, this value of living unconventionally, of embracing alternative life, work, and travel is kind of what runs through all of it. But that's admittedly broad, you know. I think I chose that in the beginning because I didn't want to get bored with it. I had started a lot of different projects and then stopped, and I was worried about that. I felt like whatever this writing project would become, it would be pretty important to me, and I didn't want to be in a situation where I was no longer motivated to do it. So I gave myself the broadest possible, application to it. And that's what led us to talking 7 or 8 years later.
So if someone were to ask, I almost hate to use the term at the end of your life, but what is the one thing, if it can be one thing, if for this common thread, what's the one thing you most want to be known to stand for?
Wow, that's a big question. I think it would have something to do with being an amplifier of people making their own choices and living for themselves in a way that's not completely selfish, but in a way that, you know, allows them to do something really awesome and great for themselves and also improves the state of the world. So the reason why I use that word amplifier is I don't necessarily think that, even though I'm starting a lot of projects, I don't necessarily think that I'm changing a lot of minds. That's not really the goal of what I'm doing. Like, people kind of come to my work when they're already in a place of change. They're already kind of open to transition, you know, so I don't have any illusion that, you know, people are quitting their jobs and making these like huge transformations just because they connected with something that I wrote. I feel like they're already in that place, and then maybe something I did pushed them a little bit or gave them a nudge. And if that, you know, if that ends up being the case, then that makes me very happy.
Wow, that is beautifully said. You know, it was the one thing that stood out to me as being very interesting. And in a moment, when we get into my discovery round questions, I'm going to ask you one of my favorite questions, which is what drives you crazy? Yeah. And in the book, you refer to asking yourself what bothers you as a way to finding a meaningful quest for your life. So tell us more about that, about what does the looking into what bothers you as a way to finding a meaningful quest?
Well, I think, you know, one of the common questions that we often hear in personal development work, whether it's writing or podcast or something, is to, you know, always be thinking about like what you're passionate about, what you're excited by. And I think that's okay. But a lot of people get stuck at that, or they don't necessarily know how to derive some actionable strategy from that. So what I found is often just as helpful is to think, okay, like what bothers you? You know, like even to be a bit crude, I would say what pisses you off, like what really offends you, you know, about either about the state of the world, or, you know, is there something, some big thing that you would like to have create change, you know, over? And a lot of people that I saw in the book, or that I studied for Quest, that's kind of what they focused on. They found something that they wanted to address or correct or improve. Doesn't always have to be a huge problem, although it certainly can. But a lot of successful businesses are also started by thinking about that question, as opposed to thinking like, what are you excited about? What bothers you? There's something that doesn't work. There's something that's inefficient. There's a service that's not great. I think that line of thinking can be just as fruitful as thinking about what excites you.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's, you know, I've heard it said that the story we're meant to tell is the story we're meant to heal from. Mm. You know, it's sort of the same idea. But I think that's more sustainable, honestly. I think the what irritates us and what we want to change is almost more sustainable than, you know, a noble optimistic idea sometimes. Mm. So now I had first heard about your work because of the World Domination Summit. So tell us all, warriors, about your World Domination Summit and what goes on there in Oregon.
Yeah, great. World Domination Summit, we're in our fourth, or actually going into our fifth year now. It's just a gathering of creative, remarkable people from all walks of life, different backgrounds. It's multi-generational. We have people from about 25 countries last year. It's now between 3,000 to 5,000 people, depending on how you count it. And it really just began out of a desire for community, desire to bring together a lot of these different kinds of folks who are doing really interesting things, but maybe they don't know a lot of other folks, you know, doing these things, or some of them, you know, they don't live in places like New York City or Portland, where it's relatively easy to be surrounded by a great community. And I had started doing meetups the previous year, and I thought, this is the greatest thing in the world, because I'm hearing all these great stories of people doing fun stuff. How can we bring them all together to, you know, to one place, not just like one night in Topeka, Kansas, one night in Omaha or something, but let's bring them all together. So that's what it is. I would definitely love to have some creative warriors with us next year.
Terrific. And it's usually held in July. Do I have that
yep,
right?
Every summer in Portland, Oregon in July.
Excellent. Well, I will be there in 2015.
Oh, great.
And I'll do my best to encourage as many people as I can gather to join us. So, Chris, in a moment, I'm going to ask you our discovery round questions. So while you're preparing yourself for these thought-provoking questions, we're going to hear about our friend Business Buddy, and we'll be right back.
Let's face it, being an entrepreneur can be challenging. What does every entrepreneur need when taking the road less traveled? A buddy. You need businessbuddy.org. Businessbuddy.org is your online resource and coaching support, like Business Buddy Happy Hour. 1 hour a month of live coaching with Business Buddy to get all your important business questions answered. Watch compelling training videos with Business Buddy Training. Business Buddy Media Cafe has a podcast every week featuring outstanding guests with a wealth of information, plus so much more in Business Buddy Development and Business Buddy Water Cooler. BusinessBuddy.org inspires, educates, and supports your personal buddy to get you on track and keep you going. Check out BusinessBuddy.org and start your free trial today.
All right, Chris, it is time for our discovery round questions. First question, which I warned you about, is, but except we're going to turn the table, what drives you crazy?
You know, I used to have this screensaver on my computer that says, why do you do this every single day? And every time I opened up my laptop, I would have to look at that because acting without thinking drives me crazy, and I'm just as prone to it as probably anyone else is.
Oh, wow. Great answer. I love that. So looking back, what's something that you can't believe you did for your career?
When I had my first book out, you know, it was with a small publisher and nobody knew who I was as an author and nobody really cared. And I wanted to, you know, reach readers wherever I could. So I set up my own unconventional book tour to all 50 states and every province in Canada. I didn't know how I was going to do it, and it was expensive. I had to pay for it myself. But it was really the best thing I did for the career because that's where the meetups came from. That's where the next book, you know, came from and so many other things. So I'm glad I did that.
Wow. What's one thing, technology or otherwise, that you have found that makes your business or life easier?
I often get behind in lots of things. I struggle with probably many of the same things that the listeners do. But I think for me, something that helps is I'm focused on deliverables. I'm really focused on outcomes. I could care less about time schedule. Just every morning I get up and I'm like, what do I have to do? Like, what is the list of things? These are the things that I'm working on. And in some ways, it's kind of tied to my happiness, which might be, you know, unhealthy, might not be, I have no idea. But for me, it makes me happy to complete things and check things off those lists.
Fantastic. Now, fourth and my favorite question is, imagine you were sitting around a campfire and out of the darkness appears your greatest enemy, which does not have to be a person. What inner warrior inside yourself do you call upon and why?
Yeah, wonderful question. I'm going to call on the warrior of experience and maybe the warrior of misadventure. And what I mean by that is, you know, throughout this whole journey, the 10 years of going to every country in the world, one, I gained a lot of confidence. I gained the confidence through experience of just figuring stuff out and realizing like it's probably going to be okay, even if something goes wrong. And then two, lots of times things did go wrong. I had what I called misadventures. I wrote a lot about them in the book. I had a car accident. I got deported from Eritrea, got kicked out of other countries, got stuck different places, stranded, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually had more of these adventures toward the end of the journey than I did in the beginning, which was interesting. I think I was kind of relaxing, you know, a bit too much. And maybe toward the end, I just didn't care because I was like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. So I would call on that, you know, warrior of experience and the warrior of misadventure.
Fantastic. So Chris has been kind enough to give us offer us a preview of the Happiness of Pursuit. And we're going to make that available for everyone on creative-warriors.com, where you can not only get Chris's generous offer, but the offers from all previous guests as well. Of course, we'll also make it very easy for you to connect with Chris to his website, to his blog, and we'll make an easy link to your book tour, where I hope as many people will come out. It's starting next week here in Brooklyn. Is that correct? On September 9th?
That is correct. Yeah, starting in Brooklyn, of course, you know, beautiful city, and then continuing to 39 more cities at least over the next couple months.
Well, I will absolutely be there next week and look forward to meeting you in person. And for those of you that are members of Business Buddy, don't forget to check out the members area for the bonus insights from today's broadcast. Chris, I want to thank you just so much for sharing and taking time right before kicking off a really busy tour to be with us. So thank you very much.
Oh, please. Thank you. As I said, it's a huge honor.
Great. Well, that's it for now, warriors. Let's go out, create, serve, and be prosperous.